Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Walls Do Talk podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle, and today I'm going to share a story with you about my very first major crime scene call out. I was just right at the beginning of my crime scene journey. I get a phone call in the middle of the night from the investigator, and she says, "Gabby, we have a homicide. Can you respond?" I immediately say yes, jump out of bed, throw my clothes on, and make my way over to the crime scene. At this part, my heart's pounding. I am so nervous. I'm excited. I have no idea what to expect or what I'm going to be doing or saying or seeing. And I can't wait. So I park my car, I get out, and I slowly make my way up to the crime scene. We're in an area, it's a small little beach community, and there's a little bungalow, and there's yellow crime scene tape taped all around the exterior of the bungalow, blocking off like the front yard area. I walk up to the tape, I show my ID to the officers, and they let me pass through. I very carefully lift the yellow tape over my head and walk right up to the front door. I see my investigator standing right there, and she turns to me and she says, "Are you ready?" I said, "Yes, yes, ma'am, I am." She said, "Okay, don't touch anything." Put my hands up and I said, "I won't touch anything. Just let me know what you need help with." So she opens the front door and we make our way in. And immediately, this is what I see. It's a small living room area, and there's a kitchen area off to the left. And in the middle of the living room is our victim. He is laying on his back, and he has just a pair of shorts on and a t-shirt that's kind of just wrapped around his neck. It's halfway on, halfway off. And his head is barely hanging on by a few threads of tissue. This guy had his head literally almost sawed completely off. He has blood caked all over his clothing, all over his face, in his hair, on his hands. There's blood on the walls, there's blood on the ceiling, and there's blood all over the floor. And the most distinctive feature is he has these huge blue eyes that are propped wide open, staring directly at the ceiling. And it's almost as if his eyelashes are stuck in an upward position, stuck to his skin from all the blood, holding his eyes wide open. And I have nothing to say. I just am staring. My mouth is probably open because I have never seen anything in person that horrific. It was unbelievable. At this point, the investigator I was with, she's already making her way through the house, talking to detectives, looking at different areas, looking for evidence. And I'm just in the corner standing there. I'm taking this all in. And the smell hit me so strong. People always say when you smell blood, it's kind of like nickels or like pennies, they go, it's the iron, right? It's the iron in the blood that you're smelling. So I smelt that, but it also smelled sweet. Like it didn't smell bad. That was the odd thing. It smelled sweet. Later come to find out that it was the alcohol in his blood that made it smell sweet. So here I am for the next, 8 hours, standing in this small cramped space of a living room, helping scientists do measurements, helping them with their bags, right next to this body. I mean, it's an enclosed inside a residence, so we don't cover the body. It's just there. We don't move it. We don't touch it until we absolutely need to. So I'm literally 2 inches away, and there's a dead guy with his head barely hanging on, just hanging out right next to us with his eyes wide open. It was the most surreal, exciting, sorry to say, moment ever. It was amazing to see the scientists do the blood stain pattern interpretation. They were able to find the weapon that was used to cut this guy's head almost off. And it was just an incredible experience. Now, to give you a little bit of backstory of what had happened that night to our guy. So it turns out that this little small bungalow apartment place is kind of just like a crash pad. Someone does rent it. There is someone that does technically live there, but people are able to come and go as they wish. And so the person that was there was kind of just like a friend. He was over there and he was able to just kind of hang out, crash whenever he wanted. And that's exactly what he was doing. It appeared that he had come over just to maybe hang, take a nap, watch some TV, something. Well, anyways, as he was doing so, somebody in that apartment attacked him. It seemed though he was laying on the couch, probably watching the TV because the TV was on when we got there. And at some point he gets attacked and the struggle is on. You can tell that the fight is on. The reason I know this is because I remember the injuries on the victim's hands. So not only was his throat severely, cut, pretty much his head was almost cut off. He had defensive wounds on his fingers, the tips of his fingers, the inside of his fingers were so severely cut. And I imagine that was from him grabbing onto the knife, trying to pull the knife away from his neck. Also, he had some of the deepest rug burns on his knees and on the tops of his feet. That also led me to believe that he was on the ground struggling, trying to get somebody off of him. And there was that friction of him rubbing his knees and the tops of his feet into the ground. We did end up finding the knife. The knife was located inside the home, and it was a big, large bread knife. So you know what a bread knife is? It's a long, long knife, and it's only serrated on the bottom, and it kind of has a curved edge and really flat. Well, they found that knife, and that knife was no longer straight and long. It was bowed. The knife actually had curved around as if someone had used it, grabbed it on both sides, and used it kind of like in a sawing motion. So it was a very intense struggle, a really, really graphic scene, but just incredibly, on the forensic side of things, it was huge. There was so much evidence there, so much documentation, and I learned a lot from that scene. I really did. And there was, I don't think there was a better way for me to get thrown into the world of crime scene investigation other than that scene. I had everything right there. And we were there forever. I mean, that's what it felt like for me. We got there, probably 3:30 in the morning, and I didn't leave there probably till 6 o'clock the next evening. So I remember getting home and telling, my roommate all about it because everyone's excited, like, wow, it's your first call out. And I'm telling them, but I'm just exhausted. I'm absolutely exhausted. And so I shower and I just make my way back to my bedroom and I knock out. And the creepy thing is I remember being asleep, and at some point in the middle of the night, I am startled and I wake up. And the only thing that comes to me instantly is the smell of his blood. It just hits me like the memory banks flood open, and that smell of that sweet blood instantly hits me. Oh, and it gave me like the chills. It scared me. And I just remember sinking back down into my bed, pulling the covers over my head as if I was 5 and like hiding from the monster in the closet. Because that's how much it creeped me out. Like, that's one thing you just don't want to think about when you wake up in the middle of the night, kind of had a dream that startled you, and you instantly smell the dead guy's blood that you were hanging out with all day long. So yeah, that is my introduction, my story to crime scene investigation for the very first time. I will never forget that. And it was an awesome experience. So thank you for tuning in. If you have any more questions about that case, please feel free to write me. Or if you have your stories to share of your very first major crime scene experience, I'd love to hear them. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Hey, it's Gabrielle. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And visit me at thewallsdotalk.com. We look forward to hearing from you.